one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, Phillies play their first game of their three-game series against the Dodgers at Citizens Bank Park, and looks like they're going to hold on for a win here. A lot of offense on Monday night. Trey Turner goes berserk, and the bullpen at the end of the game trying to find a way to make it interesting, but looks like the Phillies are going to hold on here, and they did. The Joan Duran closed it down. Phillies beat the Dodgers 10-7 here in the first game of this series, so we'll talk about the game here against LA, and we'll dip into the Mets series a little bit, but we are going to focus on the trade deadline quite a bit here on this show. We're going to play a little game called Would You Rather with regard to different trade deadline scenarios. So I've got a few different scenarios. I think I came up with 7 different trade scenarios, or really, it's about trade philosophy, what you would want to see the Phillies do coming up here in the next few weeks. So lots to get to here on this roundtable edition of Hittin' Season. That means I'm joined by Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin, of course, is from Baseball Prospectus. You can hear the Hittin' Season Patreon shows that he does, Absolutely Hammered and The Dirty Inning. And of course, you can read his new book, buy his new book that you see right behind him there if you're watching us on the YouTube, the WHYY YouTube, Summer of the Cheap Wieners. Make sure it's in bookstores and it's online, all kinds of different places. So buy one right now. Follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Trey Turner, I got to say, this is going to be interesting if he's going to have an error or two every game, but also have his bat start heating up. He had 455 in the Mets series, and then tonight against the Dodgers, he had a home run, he had a double. So two home runs and a double. And so I got to say, you know, as far as like Liz and I talked about in last episode of Hittin' Season, how high of a priority as far as adjustments go is the Trey Turner defense problem. And, you know, honestly, if his bat's going to start heating up, I'm not saying it's not a problem. I'm just saying on this team where there are enough problems already, if you can out hit your very clear defensive problems, then yeah. I don't know. I might be ready to just kind of shrug it off because, like, there's only so many of these problems you're going to be able to solve. So, yeah, if he wants to go ahead and just multi-home run game his way out of his defensive issues, then I guess we can call that a success because that's just the kind of shape the team's in at the moment.
Yeah, Liz Rocher, editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal, and you can find her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Trey Turner, 3 misplays in this game defensively. One was an error. 2 of them went down as infield hits, but we've been talking about Trey Turner's defense all season long. But yeah, 5 RBIs, 3 hits, 2 home runs. That more than cancels it out. I am more than willing to sign up for that Trey Turner this year, the rest of the way, and hopefully carrying that into October. I don't know how feasible that is, but it's what we got here on Monday night and what we've been getting really for the last 3 or 4 weeks as Trey Turner's heated up.
As long as he's heating up again, I agree with Justin. That's fine. I think I said the same thing on Friday. I'm just the happiest girl in the world if his bat's going to heat up. And because bats can overcome errors, they definitely can. So it'll be a roller coaster if he keeps doing that. It'll be, I don't know what it'll be, but we'll certainly find out.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with this plan. I'm just saying that's what's happening, then okay. At least he provided the answer to his own problems. And I will say this. This 10-7 win over the Dodgers that was concluded kind of just as we started recording, I don't know if everybody would agree with this, but this was a very fun baseball game. It had zigs.
It had zags. Yeah, it really was great.
It was messy in some ways. It was sloppy in others. But this is what you want. The Phillies' biggest problem is that it feels like when one of their flaws pops up, they're not able to use one of their strengths to overcome it. And in this game, in their worst losses, that seems to be the case. And in this game, when the hits just kept coming and the runs just kept scoring, it felt like kind of a pleasant surprise because against the Mets, it really felt like this offense wasn't getting out of bed too much. And, I might get into this a little bit later, but, when you're the offense that's got to support that fifth spot in the rotation, I know it's a tough job, but still got to get done. And, you know, facing the Dodgers at home after you just got beat by the Mets and you know, the division deficit is what it is. This was a big win. And they had to do it while overcoming the flaws we've been talking about for months. So that made it a much more fun game than it possibly was going to be.
Yeah, when they got up 4-0, you felt pretty good, but then the Dodgers start creeping back 4-1, then 4-2, and 4-3, and Trey Turner boots a grounder that lets one of those runs come in, and he'd already committed an error, and you're hearing some boos from the crowd. And really, I will say, yeah, the biggest, maybe the pure biggest hit in terms of like win probability added was Trey Turner's 3-run home run in the 6th inning that turned a 5-3 game into an 8-3 game. But really the biggest hit of the game was Brandon Marsh's home run. That's going to get overlooked to lead off the 6th inning. Brandon Marsh, a guy who had been really struggling here in the month of July and even going back a little bit before then, he'd been batting 224 in his last 34 games coming into the game here on Monday. Opposite field home run to push the Phillies margin back up to 2 runs, but also just to take some of the momentum away from the Dodgers. It felt like they were starting to build, you know, piece by piece, brick by brick to get back in that game. And Brandon Marsh set up that inning that allowed the Phillies to score 4 runs in the 6th inning. But that was a big blast. And Justin, that's your boy. He's really been kind of going through it. He picked a really good time against a really tough opponent to come through in that spot. And you're right. It is a tremendous win because the Braves won earlier in the night. They'd have been 4 back if they'd lost this game, and blowing a 4-0 lead in the process to the Dodgers, that could have been demoralizing.
We are all witnesses. But yeah, Brandon Marsh, 1-for-12 against the Mets.
Hang on. Let people catch up. Did you get it, folks? Did you hear it? Let's just hit the 30-second backwards button if you get a chance, you know, if you missed it the first time, and just listen again. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Just wanted to make sure that landed. Go ahead.
Totally fair. 1-for-12 against the Mets. 2-for-22 in his last 22 at-bats. I mean, yeah, like I said to Liz in our last episode, at least we got him to the All-Star game. A downturn was always on the table. You know, he was riding very high, and even leading up to and then during the All-Star game, you kind of saw the Brandon Marsh that you don't like seeing. But that's what made him hitting that home run tonight, honestly, was genuinely surprising. We all know when the Phillies' hottest hitters start slogging, they can slog for a little bit. Like, you might be looking at a couple of weeks of that guy. And I'm not saying anything's particularly over, you know, but it was a big home run. And I was genuinely surprised that he hit it because of the way things have been going for him lately. And that's, at the end of the day, that's even if he's still kind of like in it in the next couple of days, this wasn't nothing, you know, and it was well timed. It wasn't like he tacked it on at the end when they were up by a lot. It was like you said, John, it was a home run right when they needed one from a guy who's really been struggling. So hopefully it is, you know, the beginning of him pulling back out of this. But, you know, if it's not, it was still a big home run and it was good to see. He gets to feed off that a little bit because, you know, he's like all of them. He's getting in his head too. So I'm very pleased to see that, especially after how poorly things went for him against the Mets.
Yeah, and the Phillies with 5 home runs in this game in all, Liz. Bryce Harper got one. It was his first home run in the month of July. Bryce Harper has also been going through a pretty big slump. 157, his batting average in the month of July, with a .295 on-base percentage. He had not hit a home run off a left-hander since April. It had been a while for Bryce Harper to go deep in this one. I didn't see who he hit it off of. I mean, I saw him hit it, but I don't remember if it was against a lefty or a righty off the top of my head. But nevertheless, a big home run for Bryce Harper there to just add a little bit of insurance, which they kind of needed here in the 9th inning as Chase Shugart gives up 3 runs. And then how about your boy Derek Hill? How about your boy Derek Hill going deep in this one as well? Just another
my boy.
Your boy.
I've never met the man. I'm sorry.
That's your guy. Derek Hill, your guy, coming through. Just listen, he's all our guys. He's all our guys.
I'm just saying he's everyone. I just don't have any memory of expressing any like super special love towards Derek Hill, and I was confused that I blacked out at some point.
I just assumed that you shared the love we all have for Chase, now new Philly superstar Derek Hill. I think I said Chase Hill. I might have said Chase Hill. Derek Hill. That's fine. I did. Yeah, I figured. I had Chase Shugart in my head still. I can't get it. I can't get rid of him. He's just stuck in there.
I'm
just saying extra other contributors coming through here at the end of this game. And that it kind of goes to show you keep adding on. Don't stop adding on because you may bring in a Chase Shugart who's going to give up three runs in the ninth inning.
It's going to screw up everything.
If you're the Phillies, you're going to bring in a pitcher who's capable of giving up three runs just about any time you bring in a reliever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much
true. That feels good.
Yeah.
It was nice to see everybody. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, do you ever wonder how this team is like as well in the standings as they are?
Yes, every day.
Constantly. Every day. All the time.
You're like, wait, Harper and Marsh aren't hitting? Who's hitting? And then you look and you're like, well, I guess Turner's kind of hitting. Real Muto's hitting, you know. Sosa's kind of coming through when he gets a shot. So, like, you know, it's I guess it's happening, but they're 10 games over 500. So, like, they're doing something.
It's weird. It's not like the Brewers who keep doing it, who keep doing well year after year and no one quite knows why. Like, this is, we might need to study what's happening. Here with the Phillies.
The Phillies have a run differential of negative 10. Like, they're 11 games over 500.
That's a lot better than I thought it might be. And that's thanks to tonight.
They're 11 games over 500 with a run differential of negative 10. The Marlins have a run differential of plus 19. The Nationals are plus 15. You know, it's like, they're Pythagorean win-loss. Their Pythagorean win-loss record. Take a guess. Take a guess. How many games over or under 500 would you say the Phillies should be right now with a negative 10 run differential?
10?
Maybe 5?
No, not that much. No.
5 games?
3. So you guys, I overshot this a little bit. 49 and 52 is their Pythagorean win-loss percentage based off of their run differential. So I only mentioned that to say...
You said the word Pythagorean, and my brain just made television static noises.
That's right.
I heard a lot of beeping noises.
That's what the word is supposed to do. But no, it's just it is bizarre that they are here. And really, it comes down to the fact they have 7 studs on this team, and when they come through, they win. They come through more times than not, and when they don't come through, the team gets obliterated. Obliterate, and that 4th and 5th spot in the rotation come up. Actually, I can't lump Aaron Nola into that. He's actually pitched pretty well over the last 10 games or so. But they have these games where they just get obliterated, and that's what helps drive up the run differential in a negative to the negative side. But yeah, it is weird. This team is definitely a little bit weird. Christopher Sanchez got the start here in this one, guys. Coming off of that. Shaky performance in the All-Star game, but it's the All-Star game, so nobody really cares. But he's been kind of up and down during the course of these last few games, and he went 5 1/3 in this one. 7 hits, 3 runs allowed, no walks, 7 strikeouts. The ERA is 2.71 on the season, but again, I think some shoddy defense by Trey Turner resulted in at least one of those runs coming in, and there were a couple of occasions where he gave up some base runners that he probably shouldn't have. How are we feeling about Christopher Sanchez right now, Liz? I mean, is he if you look at the way Zach Wheeler is pitching and Jesus Luzardo is pitching, I think Christopher Sanchez, is he kind of not, he's not like a third best pitcher on in the rotation right now, but you know, he's kind of, he doesn't have that same level of consistency that he had a month or two ago.
I mean, he was pitching like gangbusters. You're not going to last a whole season doing that. So this is just, I think this is just sort of the natural up and down of the season. We just haven't seen him have some down starts, and this is it. I think despite the fact that a whole bunch of runs came in after he left, I think this was a good start. They didn't let him go over 100 pitches. They were a little conservative. I think they probably identified that he might need some rest. And unfortunately, the Phillies had a day less of rest than everybody else because they had to play on Thursday, which was enormously stupid.
Yeah, I mean, they got Friday off. I guess they thought that would make up for it, but it was weird.
It was stupid. Yeah, it was really dumb. They'd have Friday off after they all had to come back from their vacations a day early. Like, great. I think the Schwarbers probably wanted a little bit more beach time.
Well, I mean, they were all in Philadelphia. Thankfully for the Phillies, they didn't have to travel from the All-Star game, the ones who were there. But you're right. Everybody else on the team that wasn't in the All-Star game was traveling and making their way back to Philadelphia. So I get that. Yep. I think you're right. It was the Phillies were at a little bit of a disadvantage there. So were the Mets because they also played on Thursday. But Justin, yeah, I mean, I guess as we're getting ready here to kind of make this to play this series against the Dodgers, it's just kind of a continuation of some of the regular season success the Phillies have had against them in recent years. Didn't translate into the playoffs, because in the playoffs last year, we talked about this right afterwards, you saw a totally different Dodgers team than any of the Dodgers teams you saw in the regular season. Like, they just, all of a sudden, Blake Snell's healthy. We're going to run him out there every night. And Roky Sasaki's here. He's going to, and you know, he hasn't been seen hide nor hair here in 2026. The only time Roky Sasaki has been effective at all in the majors was in the playoffs last year against the Phillies. Like, that's the only time Roky Sasaki, and he was unhittable for a month last year. So this Dodgers team is a little annoying.
Yeah. Well, in the in regards to Sanchez,
Thank you for doubling back on that.
Since May 1st, he hasn't allowed more than two walks in a start, which is like, it's a great step, because before that, in April, you know, he was there a couple of games, at least three times he was allowed three, four walks. And, you know, those are obviously going to eat you up. So in that regard, you know, he's really steadied. He had that disastrous start in Detroit before the All-Star game, but then he came out and, or I'm sorry, in Kansas City before the All-Star game. And then he came out against the Tigers in Detroit and threw seven innings, allowed 10 hits, but limited runs, obviously limited walks. And then you have tonight. And I think it just comes down to what do you expect when Christopher Sanchez gets the ball? And I think you can say you're expecting six innings, I think at least, of limited walks, perhaps limited base runners, but he's going to allow a few hits. You know, he's going to allow probably like four or five, six hits, even like a good start. He might allow some runs, but, you know, you might get seven, eight shutout innings as well, because he's got that capacity. So I think you've seen, you know, a little more human side to him. Before the All-Star break, there were a couple starts he didn't make it to six innings, but fewer than you think. And I think I think it really comes down to perception. I think it comes down to, like, Christopher Sanchez got locked in to A status, and that kind of makes people think certain things about each start you're going to make, or what they can expect from each start you're going to make. And so when you have that start like the one he had in Kansas City, where the Royals just crushed the Phillies 15-1 and he didn't even make it out of the fourth inning, that might be lingering in people's minds if they're thinking about him, like, starting to struggle a little bit or not looking as sharp. And, you know, fair's fair. I don't think the changeup, I'm not sure you're saying that's one of the best pitches in baseball at the moment. You know, he was struggling with that as well, just getting that to be throwing that for strikes again and missing bats and everything. But at the same time, I think it just comes down to, once you're in that A status and you mess up a little bit, that can stay in people's minds. But his last few start, you know, tonight, obviously, you know, left before the sixth inning, but still got the job done, you know, still managed to keep the Dodgers at bay. The issue is just, this team doesn't really have a bullpen you can rely on. And the more exposure that bullpen gets, the madder you kind of get at the starter who allowed the bullpen to come in. And, you know, tonight the Phillies did what they should do, I think, more often, and score 10 runs. And just like outpace the bullpen and what we all know is going to happen, because there's no lead that's safe unless Duran's in the game and maybe Bolin, you know, credit where credit's due. And I know everybody, you know, give a little love to Mesa at the moment as well. But for the most part, this is a bullpen you don't want to see come into the game. Certainly not if Chase Shugart is the arm coming in. No way. No thanks. You stay back there. That's not welcome. So, you know, I think Sanchez, I think Liz is right that you're looking at kind of the general ebb and flow of the season. I think he's shown the capacity, like, we know what he is capable of doing, and he is certainly still capable of doing that. You know, you're going to get some bad starts here and then. You're going to get some less dominant starts here and then. But at the same time, he's going to put you in a position to win more often than he's not. And, you know, to that point, part of getting put in a position to win is acquiescing to that position. So nights like tonight feel like they have been, it's been rarer that the team has like, all right, we're going to come through. Like the offense is going to pick up. Like, oh, maybe it wasn't the sharpest Sanchez performance or the most efficient Sanchez performance of the season. We got to come through here. And, you know, not to segue into a different topic, but you see that obviously more often with the fifth spot in the Phillies rotation, which has been the bane of their existence for the most part. Yeah. And I've seen it discussed that Jim Salisbury and Ruben Amaro kind of brought this up on the Philly show, that it can be so demoralizing for the offense when that fifth spot, or you know, when any pitcher, any starting pitcher for the Phillies, but the fifth spot is typically the culprit, puts them in a hole early. It can be really demoralizing for these guys. It can be like, oh, well, you know, now we're down early. Maybe we're facing a good pitcher and like, you know, that's a bummer. And, you know, it's tough. And yeah, there's 7 or 8 innings left, but it's really, you know, it's tough to crawl out of that hole and the hitters are less likely to get the job done. And I'm sorry. I'm not a ball player. I never will be. I sucked as a little leaguer. But you know what I can't do at my job? Decide to just quit for the day because there's too much work to do. These guys, even the worst of them, are among, you know, the several hundred best baseball players on earth. It's such an honor to be, you know, transcended to the level of Major League Baseball player. And you're telling me these guys go down by 5 and they can't lift their heads up enough to hit anymore? You're telling me they're like a little league team who found out the slushy machines are broken? The Mets are in last place and they just beat them up at home. They found a way to get out of bed. They weren't too demoralized to beat the Phillies. Francisco Lindor has been playing like crap, and he made a baseball see God yesterday. They found a way to break through the haze of this terrible season the Mets have been having, and they beat the Phillies 2 out of 3. You can't hit anymore because there's only 7 innings left to score 5 runs. That better not be the reality of the situation. I understand how demoralizing it might be to go down early, to play in the heat, to play in this wildfire smoke. And certainly no players have tried to make this an excuse. But this concept that like, well, we're down early and like that's going to like unplug the offense. I'm sorry. That just cannot be a factor. You're still out there to win a ball game. And that's why tonight, just to bring it back to a positive place, that's why tonight was so refreshing because, you know, they didn't go down early, but like maybe, you know, Sanchez, didn't have his most ace-like stuff. And you're playing the Dodgers, a team that is going to creep its really way good. Back into every game if you let them. So you got to keep scoring. You got to keep hitting. And they were able to do that tonight. And that, I think, was the huge difference. Because to paraphrase George Costanza, you're not in the mood to hit. You get in the mood.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think that's a way a fan looks at it. Because we talk about these starts by the number 5 starter as, well, it's a scheduled loss. But the players don't look at these games. At least I can't imagine that they look at these games as scheduled losses that are started by Alan Ronhell or Andrew Painter or Taijuan Walker or any of the other ham and eggers who have been taking that number 5 spot up in the rotation. It's just they don't. I can't imagine they look at it that way. Now, I have not covered baseball in the clubhouse the way Jim Salisbury has and others have. And if that's really how players feel, like if they're going into a game kind of thinking like it's a scheduled loss, knowing that there's a really good chance. We haven't won a game started by our number 5 starter in what was the number? Like it's
they
some
said they're 5-20 in games started by the number 5 starter. They've got a combined 7.33 ERA. This is what they said on the Phillies show. They haven't won the Phillies a game since May 18th. Is right. I think what you're looking for.
Right. May 18th against the Reds. That's exactly right. And yikes. So yeah, it's been really bad. Andrew Painter, Alan Ronhell, and 4 relievers who've opened games they have a 6.85 ERA. With Taijuan Walker thrown in the mix, the number 5 starter has a 7.17 ERA. Like, I get it. It's all terrible. But yeah, you're right, Justin. They have bats. You know, they can score runs just the same. Now, maybe what was really demoralizing was you're going up against Nolan McClain, right? I mean, he's a really good pitcher. And so, yes.
Absolutely.
You get down 4 or 5 runs against Nolan McClain. There are some games where the manager will kind of pack it in. Well, they'll say, listen, this is not our day. We're going to send some random reliever like a Chase Shugart out there. And you're going
to
pitch 3
Shugart
innings.
To the mound.
And I don't care if you give up 15 runs in 3 innings. You're pitching 3 innings for us today. We're just going to chalk this one up to an L. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, the offense doesn't have to abide by that, right? I mean, you can change the manager's thinking by going out there and working a rally, even if it's against a good starting pitcher. So I think that's well said, Justin. And I sure hope players don't actually feel that way.
Yeah, and it's not like a bash on Salisbury or Amaro. Just throwing the concept out there, but like that just kind of, you're two games out from the division lead when the second half started, you know, behind the Braves. And you got this cushy Mets team coming to town. And yeah, Nolan McLean's a great pitcher, but you know, you didn't face a Nolan McLean in all of those games you lost while the fifth starter was, you know, giving up some runs. So that idea didn't sit well with me. That like you're trying to make this the season after the seasons we've seen. You got you caught back up to Atlanta. You got to take advantage of the situation, and you're playing this last place team at home, and like that's you get too demoralized to hit because, look, I guess that's, at the end of the day,
you got dressed for the game, right? Yeah. You drove to the ballpark. You put on the uniform. You went through all the pregame stuff, right? If you're gonna do all that, like how then I don't understand how you can go into the game like, oh well, you know, why are we even bothering today? You know, I just don't believe that most players feel that way. But I don't know.
I mean, at the end of the day, you trace the problem back to like, why does this team have a hole in the five spot? And you know, there's plenty of blame to go around, but at this point, it's more about solving the problem. Like, right. It's time to solve the problem. And the Phillies are just at that point in the season where what their flaws were going to be are here, and they are on display. And, you know, we all know the trade deadline is the time when contenders are trying to solve those problems. And I don't think they're going to be able to fix every single problem they have, even if they have an attempt in place to fix every problem. It's not going to be, you know, I don't think they're going to bat 1,000 for solving, you know, their bullpen issues, their rotation issues, their offensive issues, and their defensive issues. That's just not going to happen. But, you know, this is the time of year when those issues are really hitting a boiling point, and, you know, we're all waiting for the time in the season when they, at least one of them, can be addressed and potentially fixed. And I think I personally am just kind of running out of patience in seeing, oops, Trey Turner dropped the ball again. Oops, Chase Shugart allowed another home run. Like, these have been issues for a while. Oops, Alan Ranhel's getting a start again. You're like, yep, it's just, these aren't, in some cases, these are just not the guys, and it's time to make those adjustments. They're coming. I know that. We all know that. We're going to talk about that in a second, I think.
Right now, I mean, I was going to beautifully transitioning us. I mean, that's the segue king, guys, Justin Clue, taking us right into the next part of the show, which is going to be the Phillies trade deadline, some conversations, and we're going to play a little Would You Rather with regard to the trade deadline. I have seven different scenarios here, seven different things that could happen, or different strategies that the Phillies front office could take towards the trade deadline. I'm going to ask Justin and Liz, what would they rather with all of these different choices? It's going to usually be an either or thing, although I think in one of these things you get to choose between three potential choices. But I'm going to give you different trade deadline scenarios, and you're going to tell me what you would rather do. All right, so the first one here is, you would trade Andrew Painter, Gage Wood, and another top 10 prospect from your organization for Padres closer Mason Miller. Or you give up lesser prospects, so you hold on to Painter, you hold on to Wood, and you get two or three relievers who are not as good, obviously, as Mason Miller. Liz, let me start with you first. Would you rather the Phillies like go all in? Do you think it's more important for them to get like a top shelf, like top of the line late inning reliever to pair with Joan Duran, but you're giving up Painter, you're giving up Gage Wood because he's got years of control left, Mason Miller does? Or would you rather see them give up some of the lesser prospects but get more of a quantity of arms for the bullpen?
I'd love to go all in. I'm tired of waiting for prospects, and I don't really care about them anymore. That's going to piss some people off, but no, I'm real sorry.
She's right, folks. When she's right, she's right.
This is the time to go all in. You've got everybody, they've got a lot lined up, and I personally just don't care about what Gage Wood could be. Mason Miller is good now, and the Phillies need to be good now. They actually caught back up to the Braves. I didn't see that happening. Most people didn't.
Yeah.
Close.
Oh, come on.
They didn't catch the Braves yet. We're not, we're not rounding up here. They're not going to round up at the end of the season.
They have almost caught up to the Braves. That's true. They have not technically done it yet. But they're within two games, which is, again, farther back than I saw them coming.
No doubt.
I think I'm a more reluctant yes than Liz, but I mean, are we taking contracts into account here? Because like we're talking about a rental in Miller. If you're giving up, you know, that's pretty close to it for your farm system for the near future, and you're getting a couple months of the, you know, one of the top relievers in the game. But the position the Phillies are in is kind of like, you know, here we are having not won the World Series again. Bullpen needs a lot of help, and it needs. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Justin, but the Phillies would have Mason Miller under team control for another 3 years. He cannot become an unrestricted free agent until after the 2029 season. So he would be under team control for 27, 28, and 29.
Oh, I'm sorry. Cots baseball contracts lists him as just being on a 1 year deal for 2026. That's my bad. So Mason Miller and Johan Duran in your bullpen instantly makes you feel better about your bullpen, certainly at the end of the game. But it also doesn't fix the whole bullpen. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you can claim it's you know, there's a ripple effect and job, you know, guys have a better idea of what their jobs are. Maybe you see better performances from guys you have. Maybe you know, you're bumping up. I know you're talking about like Alex McFarland or like, you know, you're bringing in new guys who aren't necessarily, you know, great, but potentially could at least be better than what's been out there. And then you're also giving up on Painter, which is different than trading a top prospect. This Phillies farm system just has not been fertile and was just ranked 29th. By Baseball America. Like, there's not a lot here, and you gotta, you know, there was a lot of hope pinned to Andrew Painter. He was sky high in projections and predictions. Obviously, the injury played a role, in his downturn, and he, you know, suddenly couldn't locate his fastball. I think he sunk lower than people thought he was going to sink. But just to zigzag again, if you're already 29th ranked farm system, it's not like they're going to fix it anytime soon.
Yeah,
so
right.
Maybe it is time to just cash out and say, let's go with the guy we know is one of the best relievers in the game, pair him with another guy who's one of the best relievers in the game. And are we saying that's the only thing they do to address the bullpen in this hypothetical?
Yeah. I think that's part of it. I think anytime, because they have, so I love how people, this is one of the things that annoy me. I love how people, when they talk about the Phillies farm system, they don't, it's not that deep. That's what you hear. Like, it's not that deep. No. Stop calling the Phillies farm system not that deep. It stinks. They don't have anything to trade. Okay? It's lousy. They don't have anything that anybody wants or that anybody's going to give up anything great for. You've got like one or two guys. So you've got like, if you're going to make a big acquisition, you're basically saying we're going to use all of our guys for this big acquisition. And then you may not have much left to get anything else. So that is a factor here. That's going to be a factor with the next couple of questions that I'm going to throw at you here. Because yes, if you gave up, to get Mason Miller, again, 3 years of team control against maybe the best closer, probably a better closer than Johan Duran right now, honestly, if we're being honest. And he's going to be relatively cheap, all things considered, because he's a relief pitcher, so he's not going to be a $30 million a year guy. So you have him for all these years of team control. You're going to have to give up Gage Wood. You're going to have to give up Andrew Painter. You might have to give up this Francisco Renteria kid you just got from the international signing period last time around, who's rocketing up the prospect charts. You might, in order to get a guy like that, so that means yes, you probably can't get an impact bat. You can't get an impact starting pitcher. So you basically, I think the Phillies, no matter what, are going to have to choose one thing. Like if they're going to trade these guys, these top prospects, it's going to be one particular area. And so, yeah, I think I would probably do it for Mason Miller. I wouldn't do it for Luke Weaver. But I'm gonna do it for Mason Miller. Yeah, I think
Do it for Mason Miller. I think I can confidently say that. Yeah. I mean, Gage Wood, I have no issue giving him up in a deal like this. Really, it just comes down to Painter and your belief that he's going to be anything close to what he was projected to be for you. Because that would be a huge loss. And I know, you know, you learn the lesson time and time again. And you can look back at the prospects, top Phillies prospects that have been traded, and not really see anybody you feel too bad about coming back to bite you. I don't, Painter is just, you know, he was different. He was supposed to be different. And, yeah. You know, if the Phillies made a trade for Mason Miller and they won a World Series, I'm not sure if you can really complain if Painter comes back, wins a Cy Young. I don't know. That ultimately that's the goal here. And this era still doesn't have its World Series title. So I think at this point you go for it. Maybe 4 years ago, you know, if you're in a similar situation, you're thinking a little more about the future. But I think a lot of us are thinking a lot more about what hasn't been accomplished than what will be.
I want to actually say you guys are both right about his contract. He made his debut not too long ago, was 2023. And so he's still under team control, but he's arbitration eligible. So he is on technically a one-year deal.
Yeah, Siri, yeah, exactly right.
Thank you.
Right.
I was just going to have John edit that out to make me look smarter, but thank you.
You're both correct.
Yeah, that's right. I like it when we're both right. That makes me happy.
That's why I figured I'd mention it.
Yes. Scenario number two. Would you trade your top prospects for an impact bat? And I'm going to throw some names out here that may or may not be doable, but like Shea Langeliers, the A's unbelievable catcher, who I'm sure you could probably play someplace else, you know, DH or whatever, and put Schwarber in left field. I don't know. But to get a guy who's got like huge power from the right side of the plate, he's apparently being dangled by the Athletics. Shea Langeliers, Xander Bogaerts, maybe, Rafael Devers, Bo Bichette, Luis Arraez. Would you rather go get one of those bigger bats? There's not a lot of great names out there. I know I said Bo Bichette. We'll come back to that. You guys can laugh further after I'm finished. Or would you rather give away lesser prospects for yet another right-handed platoon bat like Joe Adell or Lane? I'm actually, you know what, Spencer Steer and Lane Thomas kind of interest me. Spencer Steer is a decent-looking utility right-handed hitter who plays all over the place. Lane Thomas can play all three outfield positions, and his numbers look really good this year. So he could be a positive addition to the team. I don't know. What are you thinking in terms of the bats? Liz, I'll start this one out with you. I started with Liz last time. Justin, let me start with you on this one. Impact bat. Do any of those impact bats interest you? Like, how are you doing the trade deadline with the bats?
Any right-handed impact bat does interest me. I think a bigger question is, how dire do you consider getting Gabriel Rincones Jr. off the field? Like, there are people who feel that him being part of a platoon makes making the trade not worth it. Like, there's no reason to, like, it's a half measure, not a fix. So while I'm not completely turned off by the idea of a Joe Adell or a who was the other one?
Spencer Steer, Lane Thomas are the ones that Spencer I was just Steer, thinking of.
But there's somebody else that's been the talked about right-handed bat out there.
Taylor Ward, no, I forget. Another one.
Taylor Ward, yeah. Even like Jake McCarthy is still a name that gets floated out there, even though he's drifted from Arizona to Colorado these days. Is any of these problems so fixable that it's worth not fixing the others? And I guess if any one of them was, it would be this right-handed bat. I guess that would do, like, even more so than putting Mason Miller in the bullpen and then rolling with, like, six other arms you don't feel great about, even with him and Duran. Putting this right-handed impact bat in the batting order that they've been missing so much. And that a key point of this also is so many other teams are missing. You're getting him and they're not. That gives you an advantage that other teams you're going to be playing against just aren't going to have. That's a big deal too. And I mean, they wanted to make it work. They wanted one of these randos to just, you know, figure it out, to bounce back, to be the answer without them having to spend big. And part of that's because they may be only capable of making one deal like this. But boy, oh boy, you said top prospects. We didn't list any names, but I guess we all know who they are. So at this point, yeah. I mean, I guess the philosophy carries over from the bullpen. Like, if you see a way to make this deal by trading some top prospects for a guy who can actually make a difference rather than another guy who might just, you know, be flailing out there while you march out the other half of the platoon that you've been putting out there all season. I mean, the one thing we know is that it hasn't worked. It just hasn't worked. So if you're going to make the change, make the real change. I guess I'm ready to see it. But since we're doing this one at a time,
yeah,
it's tougher to take into account the cost of like, okay, but now you can't fix the bullpen. Okay, yeah, but now you're not getting that back end or the rotation starter that you need. So it's a little easier to do it this way. But I guess of the needs, man, adding that impact bat could have the ripple effect across the board, especially if you look at like, okay, let's imagine Harper, you know, isn't in this funk forever that he's currently back in. Schwarber keeps doing Schwarber things. Trey Turner's bat heats up. And Marsh finds a way out too. That's a stout lineup. That's a lineup that can contend, and that's a lineup that can do what we saw tonight, that can hit your way out of an issue where maybe the pitching's given up more runs than you wanted them to, but you're still able to out-hit them. I mean, yeah, I guess you gotta make that deal too.
I agree with you. Like, the way I've organized this is a little clunky because you're right. If you do put all of your prospect capital in on a reliever or a bat or a starting pitcher, it affects what you can do with those other different things. But I needed a tent peg topic. I needed a, you know, this is how you drive SEO, guys. I mean, this is just podcasting 101. You got to make it like a, you know, an event segment, you know, and that's, I guess
at the end, we need to say, if you could only make one of these deals, which one are you making? Because that's the tough question.
You know what? If you all look down on the show sheet to question number 4, maybe we should have led off with that question. That would have made this. I never said I was good at this; just that I have the playbook. You know, that's the only that's where this is coming from. Liz, what do you think on the bats?
I mean, I agree with Justin. Getting a right hand impact bat would be great. But where do you put him? I mean, if it's like, there are only two impact bats I give a single crap about, and that's Shea Langeliers and Luis Arraez. Those are the only two that I want to consider at all. At least with Shea Langeliers, they get a catcher, which they actually need in the future. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I'm thinking about. They really need a catcher, and if Shea Langeliers is as good as everyone says he is, he should be there. He should be on the Phillies because they have literally zero options. Maybe they have someone in like the low minors or something, but that's a long time coming. So yeah. I really think if they're going to do anything, it's got to be Shane Langeliers, or like Arraez is really consistent. But unless he plays full time, I don't understand where he goes. Like, that's the thing. If you get Luis Arraez, you have to play him full time. He's too good to not play full time. So that means he has to bump either first, second, or third base out.
Yeah.
And the only one of those I'd think about would be Alec Bohm, but I guess then he becomes superfluous if you actually get, I mean, I don't know. I just, the other bats do not attract. I mean, Xander Bogaerts makes me want to throw food at the diamond. I don't right. want him on the team at all. None of these other guys really appeal to me at all.
The extra complicating factor here is that when we say impact bat rather than half measure, all of those impact bats aren't outfielders, which is what you want the right-handed impact bat to be. And then you go down a level to your Joe Adels and your Spencer Steers, and like, there's your outfielders. But
yeah,
is that enough? Is that the answer?
It's not the answer. It's what they've done every year. And and maybe if Harrison Bader doesn't get hurt in game one against the Dodgers, he helps the offense. But, you know, I don't know about that. He had a big impact when he was here. He helped stabilize the outfield in the second half of the year. And they really did miss him in that Dodgers series. But, you know, is Spencer Steer, Lane Thomas, Joe Adell, Taylor Ward, any of those guys? It's probably not an answer. You're right. And you're right, Liz. Luis Arraez, I've never been a big fan of his. But you look at what the Phillies really, really struggle with, and it's getting on base. They're on base percentages among the worst in baseball. Arraez does a great job of getting on base. And you're right, Shea Langeliers would be a tremendous addition at catcher. You either make Real Muto a very expensive backup, or you give JT Real Muto an outfielder's glove, and you say, JT, you're still pretty athletic out there. You know, it's not like sending Carlos Ruiz out to learn right field. You know, JT Real Muto can still run a little bit, can still get around a little bit. Maybe you can teach him something, but you know, but you could also, here's one of the things. If you did want to, what?
Sorry, I just love that you suggested that. Just the one thing we've been talking about for years. Like, we hate it when they do this. And now we're like, JT Realmuto, go get a glove and be in the outfield.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't work this year, but...
But that's it, though. It's like you make the one move that makes a lot of sense, and then you got to do some stuff that doesn't make as much sense to fill in the rest of the gaps.
That's a challenge. Is there a deal out there that makes 100% sense?
No, and that's the thing. Not when it comes to acquiring a bat. I mean, the only thing that would make sense, and I don't know if you guys would do this swap, but let's say you do target Luis Arraez, and let's say, hey, you send Bryson Stott to San Francisco. And the reason the Giants might do that is because Stott has another year of control. He's under team control for next year. Would the Giants consider that? Would they consider a swap of Luis Arraez for Bryson Stott? I would do it. You're losing some defense at second base, but Bryson Stott's defense hasn't been quite as good as it was over the last couple of years. I think he's a better hitter than Bryson Stott. He's certainly a more consistent hitter than Bryson Stott is. I think I'd probably do that. I probably would make a trade for Luis Arraez and trade Bryson Stott. I think you'd probably also maybe have to get there'd have to be some other players in that deal. Now, the value comes from Bryson Stott having another year of team control. Luis Arraez is a better hitter. So I think it's actually kind of a fair deal in terms of like what you're giving and getting there. But I don't know. That's a good would you rather. Would you... It's not a would you rather, but would you? Would you trade Bryson Stott for Luis Arraez straight up?
Yeah.
I would. Think so. That makes me sad to see him in another uniform because I just adore him, but that's too good of a deal to pass up.
Yeah. Plus going over to the Giants and their horrible culture, but still, Luis Arraez offers you what you've been missing for your entire span here. Consistency, the thing people are after more so than anything else. The things that they were after when they went out and got, a couple of years ago, it was like McCutcheon and Robertson, and they were like, these guys, they never get hurt. And, that look what happens. So, like, you get bringing a guy for consistency like that, and it just sort of irons out the rougher edges of your offense. It's tough to argue against because, again, the position this team is in this era of playoff baseball, kind of necessitates you kind of got to go for it if you see a chance to.
Yeah. All right. Question number three. Oh, go ahead, Liz.
Oh, no. I just wanted to say more about this topic, but.
Well, say more about this topic. We're in a podcast. We're not in time constraints.
I was just looking at splits, and Shane Langeliers is hitting .336 off of lefties this year.
No. Oh. I want him, I want him, I want him. Yeah.
JT Realmuto is hitting .222, which is definitely better than the .211 that he's hitting against righties.
He's not good.
He's been hitting better lately.
He has been. In July, he's one of their... He I think, has the most wins above replacement in July of any Phillies player. I think I saw that today.
Over the last 2 weeks, he's hitting .300.
This Phillies roster is full of guys we have begged and hoped and pleaded for the team to retain and who have been immediately complained about upon returning to the team.
A record number.
Rightfully,
No. Yeah, and in both cases, we were all right.
That's
and
right.
I mean,
we're all right.
not just the people on this show, everybody.
Everybody. No one has been wrong about anything when it comes to the Phillies because at one time or another, we've all been right. We've all been right. Yeah. Just about everybody and everything until it's.
I've been wrong about some stuff.
But it's a delightful team.
Yeah. All right. And so along the same lines, number three, would you trade higher end prospects for an impact starting pitcher? Now, I listed like Jose Soriano, Reed Detmers, Robbie Ray, because these guys are probably going to be the top starting pitchers moved here at the trade deadline. Guys like Tarik Skubal aren't going anywhere. So these are probably like three of the top names that are out there. And they're all guys with ERAs in the upper threes, kind of low fours. Or would you trade even lesser prospects for more of like a pure number five starter? And I'm just going to throw some potential names out there. Like a Sean Manaea could be somebody that you'd be looking at. Let's see, who else? Tyler Mahle of the Giants, who's got a 5.31 ERA in 15 starts. Brady Singer with the Reds, he's struggled, but he's been pretty good over the last five starts, like a 2.83 ERA. Michael Wacha from the Royals. That's and Seth Lugo, those guys are kind of interesting. And ERA, like, in, again, the upper threes, low fours, like, those to me are kind of like your number five, low four and high number five starters, as opposed to like a Jose Soriano, Reed Detmers, Robbie Ray, who are probably more along the lines of like a number three. I don't think there's any aces getting traded here at the trade deadline. I'd be very surprised. So, yeah, would you rather go for one of the lesser number fives, or would you, again, understanding that there are other needs, go higher in for a better starting pitcher, maybe who would even pitch a playoff game for you?
I'm not giving up big prospects for Robbie Ray. I'm sorry. I'm just not doing that. I would rather go for some actual true number five starters, which is kind of what they need. They just need one who they have one. They just need a better one. And guys with low three with a, you know, 3 and 4 ERAs, I'm happy with that. That's not an automatic loss.
No, it's not.
I think that's all we're looking for, is not an automatic loss every time. And I think the Phillies can definitely find someone who is not too pricey to fill that role. That I don't think that should be hard for them to do.
This should be, well, I guess that's what Liz just said. This should be the easiest kind of thing to do, yeah. Because the more I think about it, the less I think this factors into, like, this shouldn't be affected by going all in somewhere else, because end of the day, we're all aware of the grim statistics coming from the number five spot in this rotation where the Phillies have started: Taijuan Walker, Andrew Painter, Alan Rangel. But they are 11 games over 500, despite that being the case. So they have been able to make it work, even with a gaping hole in that spot. You're just looking for stability. What is an elite number five starter? That's not a thing. Yeah. If he was elite, he'd be a number three starter at least. So this team has a playoff rotation. Not every team, even among the contenders, can really say that. This team has three guys you can start in a playoff series, and Aaron Nola can smoke a cigarette outside. But, like, they do have that. They do have that. And that can get you, that should be enough for the playoffs. I'd love to see something, you know, short up here, like you said, but I'm not going to be thrilled when it's Sean Manaea or something, but, like, that's kind of, you're just looking for stabilization. You know, you're just looking for a better shot. You're not looking for a lights out starter because you have that already. Yeah. So, yeah, I'd be much more willing here to trade low level guys for a low level guy. This doesn't have to be the loudest deal you make.
Upgrade is an upgrade, no matter how small it is. And in this case, it doesn't actually have to be a big upgrade. It just has to be better.
Yeah, for me, the Michael Wacha, Seth Lugo type of pitcher is like the perfect sweet spot here, because you can piggyback him with Aaron Nola in a playoff start. You know, you have Aaron Nola start, he gives you two or three innings, you bring in Michael Wacha for like two or three innings. Like, that's kind of what you're looking for with your number five starter in the postseason. And then along the way, those guys can give you some decent starts throughout the last couple of months of the season. So I'm with you guys. I don't think the Phillies are going to be in the market for whoever the top starting pitchers are on the trade deadline, and I think they're going to be the guys I just mentioned a second ago.
I think you got to think like 2022 Noah Syndergaard. You know,
he wasn't
going to blow anybody away, but he kind of stabilized the job and made you feel a little better about it. That might have been Dave Dombrowski's best trade deadline with the Phillies so far. Am I forgetting something obvious?
Well, last year's trade deadline was very good. If Harrison Bader doesn't get hurt.
Maybe
even better. It's just unfortunate that Bader got hurt. But other than that, he did he got Bader and he got Duran last year, which.
And Duran. Yeah, that's very good. Yeah. But he got Brandon Marsh in 2022.
And Brandon
now
Marsh
is an all-star. So.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. All right. Question number four. Would you rather blow all your prospect capital on a starting pitcher, relief pitcher, or impact bet? I think we can cross off starting pitcher. That's the decision we just came to. And it seems to me, based off of what you all were saying, is the impact bat is still the number one priority for the Phillies. It should be anyway.
Yeah. If you're blowing all your impact, your big prospects, I think, you go with the impact bat. You got a guy who's going to play every day, potentially make a difference every day. You know, there's some that obviously was a much sexier back of the bullpen, you know, throwing in Mason Miller in that hypothetical. But I think you got to go with the bat.
Here's my thing, though. They can't settle. If they can't get an actual impact bat, if they get one of those low range guys, that's not enough. If they can't get like an actual impact bat, or at least someone who might contribute to the team down the road a little bit, then they've got to go with the reliever. They have to go in all in on one thing. And if it can't be, if it's not going to be one, it has to be the other. Like they can't, they have to make a big move.
I think we're totally in agreement on that. But what if it wound up, what if the deal was like, okay, we got Mason Miller and we got Joe Adell. It kind of makes you feel better about the half measure on offense if you're going lights out.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, I think you're right.
They have to do one of them. They can't do two half measures.
Although I'll say that I'm afraid of.
I'd rather it be the other way, that the impact bat and then a.
But I think the far more realistic scenario is the one you all laid out with Mason Miller, a guy like Mason Miller. And no, I don't think the Phillies are landing Mason Miller. I don't think. I think there's going to be teams that have better things to trade and maybe more desperate to trade for Mason Miller. And I'm not even convinced the Padres are trading him. You know, it's like the pipe dream guy. But I think the Phillies are more likely to land an impact reliever than an impact bat, just because I think there's simply a few more of them out there. But that being said, you know, I think that it's going to be Derek Hill has been interesting so far for the Phillies. And he kind of reminds me like of the outfield version of Edmundo Sosa in terms of impact and his, you know, what he's able to do in the outfield, able to play center field and right field out there. You know, I don't feel the need for Spencer Steer or Lane Thomas or Joe Adell. Right now, you know, I mean, I don't know how long the Derek Hill magic is going to last, but he's hitting right-handers with the Phillies way better than he ever has in his career. Is that Kevin Long? Have the Phillies helped him figure something out that he's becoming a better platoon player where you can actually play him against a righty every now and then? He gives you great defense. He gives you great defense in center field. So he's a positive that way. And he's still hitting. Like, it's been a month and the guy's still hitting. He's hitting for power. I don't feel the need to waste capital on Joe Adell with Derek Hill out in right field right now.
Yeah.
I just don't.
That's fair. That guy's already here. You're right.
It feels like it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe we'll be wrong. Maybe Derek Hill hits the skids over the next couple of weeks and they're like, yeah, we need to get somebody else in here. But he's been phenomenal. And you're not going to get better production than what Derek Hill has been giving you as a platoon guy out in right field. But that being said, like if you get a big name bat, yes, that's going to be the priority. I think that's 100% right. All right, I've got three more of these to run down. Would you rather get players for all three major needs and have none of them be like really good, or trade for an impact player at one of those positions and possibly totally neglect one of the other three areas of concern? I do kind of feel like maybe we've already answered this question.
Yeah, yes. that one's like the, have you noticed anything about our luck lately as far as bounce back candidates or taking a flyer? Like, but like, you're never going to know if you're wrong by not acquiring those guys. So I would rather go all in somewhere.
The argument against it is this team has a lot of needs. They have a lot of holes to fill. So let's spread it out. You know, we only have so much we can trade. Let's try and spread it out and fill in as many gaps as we can and hope that, you know, if we get two relievers and we get, you know, another bat and we get a couple of starters, we get one star, you know, if you spread these things out, that if two of those three hit, you're in great shape. The obvious downside is if none of those pan out for you, which is, You run that risk. It's a greater risk of that happening when you're getting guys who aren't high impact guys that could happen too. And it's a total disaster in that way. So, Justin, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I guess just the same thing a different way, which is like, do you want a guy with a high likelihood of solving one problem or guys with low likelihoods of solving every problem? And I mean, if you're playing the percentages, the impact, we keep saying impact bat, that impact that, you know, a great new reliever, I would, you know, or the new bat in the lineup, you'd be surprised at how much smaller the other problems can feel and the true impact that impact bat can have. It can go beyond offense. It might mean less time for the bullpen to be exposed because you have a larger lead and suddenly the bullpen doesn't feel as bad because you're not using it as much. Like on top of the fact that there just is no such thing as a perfect ball team. There's no such thing as a team that goes out, solves all of their problems, and has absolutely no vulnerabilities for the rest of the season. That's just not going to happen to anybody. So understand that, and the idea of, you know, half measures everywhere suddenly makes a lot less sense.
Yeah, it feels like the late 1990s Yankees aren't walking through that door anytime soon. All right, two more of these. Would you rather trade Andrew Painter or Gage Wood? Liz, let me start with you on this.
I'm good with trading Andrew Painter, I'll say. It's disappointing that I've lost almost all faith in him, but, you know, I mean, they could hold on to him longer and see if he improves, but maybe it's, I don't know. It seems early to say it's time to move on, but they really put a lot on him this year, and he did not deliver. And that's tough on him because it's not really his fault. But at the same time, they need to be a better ball club. They just need to.
Gage Wood's 22 years old. I like the promise he's shown, but, you know, I think there's still a lot of space there, and I'm still holding on to Painter. I will hold on to Painter because I think the potential, you still want to be able to benefit from it if you can. You know, yeah, put him in a trade for Mason Miller, I guess, but like, if you don't have to trade him, it's still worth having that guy around where you're like, think of what he was supposed to be. If he can even be close to that again, he can still have pretty good value. Whereas Gage Wood is, you know, solid, but just, you know, another type of prospect you'd throw into a deal, I feel like, if you see one you want to make.
Well, this was a really tough one for me because I look at Andrew Painter's stuff since the surgery and it's not the same. He's not the same pitcher. He doesn't have the same stuff. He doesn't have the same movement. He doesn't have the same command. There are guys who get Tommy John surgery and they never get it back. And he was at one time at 19 years old, he looked like the next Garrett Cole. And right now, at this moment, he looks like the next Brandon Duckworth. And that's just kind of what it looks like at this moment. Now, he could recover after another year of doing what he's doing this year. He could show up in spring training next year and the electricity's back after another year of kind of the arm getting used to doing what he was meant to do. My concern is that it's gone forever with Andrew Painter. And if this is the stuff he's going to have, if this is it, you know, it's not good enough, and he's not going to be, he's going to kind of go the way of Spencer Howard. You know, he's going to go the way of Sixto Sanchez. You know, these guys that, you know, were big prospects for the Phillies and had all this electric stuff, and it didn't pan out for them. And you're right, it's not his fault. You know, you can't help getting Tommy John surgery, tearing, you know, your UCL and needing reconstructive surgery. And most of these guys come back great from it. He has not so far. So I feel like I'm more pessimistic on him returning to kind of that elite prospect status that we saw. He's never going to be a prospect again. He's graduated from being a prospect, but to have that kind of excitement and that kind of upside again. As for Gage Wood, he looks like a decent prospect down there, but he's never had the upside that Andrew Painter once had. And I don't know that he does have that upside. He does not project to be a top of the rotation starter. And I don't know what he would look like against AAA pitching, against AAA hitting, and against major league hitting. So I think I would probably rather trade. I think I'm with Justin. I think I would rather trade Gage Wood, if only because I am still curious about the upside of Andrew Painter. That being said, I would have no qualms about moving either one or both for an impact relief pitcher or an impact bat. But I think it's tough for me to say because both guys, you know, it's tricky.
Boy, I was scrambling to find a stat from Brandon Duckworth to make it worth keeping Andrew Painter, and I got to tell you, you can't find one. He pitched five solid collective innings at the White Sox Stadium in his career over three appearances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my opinion on Painter is based on what I said, but it's also based a little bit on giving him sort of a fresh start. I don't think Phillies fans or the Phillies organization will kind of be able to get over what he was expected to be and what he is now or at least what, you know, we don't know what he'll be in the future, but what he is now. And at the very least, I kind of want to give him a chance to, you know, maybe after another season, give him a chance to find somewhere else and make a new start. Same thing happened with J.P. Crawford. He went away and found a home and a place where he excelled, and where all the time people were looking at him as, oh, failed number one prospect, or, you know, failed number one draft pick. So, you know, that's my thinking on there. But maybe he does need sort of an extra year for us to see how everything pans out. But let's keep in mind, it has been a number of years since his surgery.
Yeah. Yep. It's been, he had the surgery, what, in 23, was it that he got hurt? 23? And
I
he
think
was,
so.
No, it was the 20. Yeah, I think it was 23. 24, he was out the whole year. And then he came back last year in 25. So, yeah, it's been, this is his third year post surgery. And next year would be his fourth year post surgery. So, it'll be interesting to see what his trade value is too. I don't know how other organizations value him at this point. Same with Aiden Miller. I don't think there's an organization that would touch Aiden Miller if you offered him a deal because of his back. And still, that's the quietest prospect injury.
Oh man, I completely forgot about him.
Everybody's forgotten about him. I mean, yeah, it's would love an update. Would love an update, but you know, it's not for me to know. We're wanting to know the reason why. All right, the last one. Would you rather pick up a bat that excels in getting on base, like Luis Arraez, or has power? And I grouped Willy Adames and Eugenio Suarez in there as well. Those guys all have, you know, flaws. I think maybe we covered this ground. Are we all in agreement that Arraez is probably the better? Oh, I guess if you're going to throw Langoliers in there, is it better for them to get a guy who's getting on base or a guy who hits for power? Let's say the guy who hits for power does not get on base at a high clip.
I'm going to say get on base guy.
I'm going to agree.
I think it's easier to be consistent as an on base guy than a solely power guy. The Phillies have like the best power hitter in baseball currently. Mm-hmm. Harper, you know, is theoretically a power threat, and Turner hitting a couple home runs tonight and generally hitting better lately. You know, I want you to be able to think there's power in this lineup the way they're supposed to be. So if you start getting some more guys on base while those guys are homering, I think you're better off, especially if you're consistently getting on base.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think the on-base guy is more important. Somebody you can set up at the top of the lineup. I mean, I might even put Arraez at the leadoff spot and move Trey Turner down. Get a guy who gets on base more consistently in front of Schwarber and Harper. And, you know, have Arraez down hitting in like the five or the six spot or something. I mean, a Turner hitting in like the five or the six spot, something like that. But I'm with you. I never thought, I wouldn't have thought Luis Arraez would be my top bat option that I would be wanting them to go get him. Obviously, a guy like Langoliers or somebody like that would be, in my opinion, because Langoliers has a good on-base percentage as well. Like, he's a well-rounded hitter. I just don't see him getting traded. I don't see anybody like that getting traded at this trade deadline.
The Athletics are run by people with very little care for the future of their team. And so beyond it moving to Vegas and being profitable.
Well,
so, I wouldn't count it out.
And the reason he's getting mentioned is because they just tried to sign him to a long-term extension, but it was a cheap long-term extension, and he said no.
No kidding.
Yeah, so that's part of the issue there, too.
I bet even if it was a lot, he might say no.
Might have said no.
And all right, know, keep
like
in mind that
sad place to be.
Yeah.
Any exciting player we're imagining hypothetically being traded to the Phillies has to go through the process of, as John made reference to, the other teams that have probably better offers to make for all of these people. The Phillies are not going to be first in line for any guys that you truly want to for them to make a deal for. So that's kind of some context here as well. Reminds me when you were like, if you were trying to buy a house a couple years ago, and you could run into like a little old lady who was like, I just want someone to buy this house who's going to raise their family in this house the way that I raised my family. And you're like, wow, that's the assets we have. Let's buy this house. And then you come back the next day and you're like, a guy with a suitcase full of cash came by and that's his house. That's his house now.
Yeah, pretty much. That's about right to me.
Yep.
All right, let's wrap up this edition of Hittin' Season with some quick final thoughts. Liz, you got any final thoughts for the people?
I do have some final thoughts. During tonight's broadcast on ESPN, the announcers are David Ross and two other guys. I don't know who they are. But they were doing a comparison of Mookie Betts and Trey Turner. They're both having down seasons. But they made specifically mention about Trey Turner's speed and his base stealing. He's stolen, 17 bases as of yesterday. Now, Mookie Betts has stolen a grand total of one. But who do you think has been a more active base stealer over the last, let's say, 5 years?
Well, based on your question, I would maybe say Mookie Betts.
No, actually, it's Trey Turner. Over the last 5 years, he's 51 stolen bases, Mookie Betts.
That's a pretty good number.
It is, but Trey Turner is definitely doing better with 129.
Wow.
And so I'm just a little annoyed that no one looked at these stats before opening their mouth.
Well,
it took
ESPN.
Me three. It took me four clicks. They have these stats on their stupid site. I use Baseball Reference, but if you wanted to use ESPN's outdated, frustrating site, you certainly could. But these stats are available to anyone, including the dunderheads who are calling tonight's game.
What do you think the last time David Ross looked at Baseball Reference was? Come on now.
That's right. No, probably not.
And like that was their comparison. Like, yeah, they're hitting similarly. I mean, if you want to say one of them is better than the other, you could use stolen bases, or I don't know, you could use error percentage. That might help.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Mookie Betts has been nearly as bad. You could use that, and I think that might actually be more relevant than stolen bases, something that Mookie Betts has barely done.
Well, stolen bases is a kind of a new fancy statistic that's just catching on. So you got to give these guys a little bit of time to get acclimated to some of the new stats that are out there, Liz. I think you're being unfair. Just terribly unfair. Justin.
I'm out of words. I'm sorry. I'm done now.
Justin, final thoughts. Yeah.
The summer of the cheap wieners continues. Once again, the 1941 Phillies are back in the headlines as the uniforms for the Field of Dreams game were revealed, and the Phillies' gray road uniforms were inspired by the same uniforms the team wore in, 1939 to 1941, when they lost 111 games. But still, on that note, Summer of the Cheap Wieners, your number one resource on the 1941 Phillies that people just cannot stop talking about here in 2026, will be the Amazon Kindle Deal of the Day for National Book Lovers Day on August 9th.
Whoa!
Steal it.
All right.
Can steal it for $9.95, unless you're Mookie Betts and you just don't steal
anything.
Often.
Yeah. That's fantastic, Justin. Congratulations.
That's great.
Way to go, Thank you. That's awesome.
I cannot believe the Phillies are providing the assist in the marketing of the 1941 Phillies this summer. That's like the third time. I mean, yes, the last two times were comparisons to truly abysmal statistics, but we're past that now. And we can just celebrate the uniforms, which are, by the way, objectively good baseball
uniforms. Yeah.
They're so good.
They're really sharp. Yeah, if you haven't seen them yet, go on the Phillies website. They've got them there, too. And frankly, the Phillies should be partnering with you, Justin, and putting together like a whole extravaganza of events over this, coupling your book.
They should couple your book with
the jersey sales. You know what I mean? Like, even, you know, they should just buy a stack of, like, you know, 10,000 copies of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, and anybody who wants to buy one of these jerseys gets a copy of the book. I don't see what the problem is here. I really don't.
Hey, you know, there's wieners and losers, and the Phillies have clearly made their choice.
Phillies have always made their choice.
On that note, folks, you're right. And we're going to say goodnight for this edition of Hittin' Season. Again, this is the roundtable edition of the podcast. So we are, of course, on the WHYY YouTube channel. So if you want to watch the show, you can subscribe to WHYY's YouTube channel, and we will be there. But if you're an audio-only person, we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. So please tell your friends and family members and even random people that you meet on the street about the show and about Justin's book, Summer of the Cheap Wieners. I'll be back with a midweek show. Justin and Liz will be back at the end of the week. Until then, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.